We're discussing the Palestinian-Israeli conflict and the Eight Torah approach. Kishem shepartzufeim shonim deotem shonot. Our sages tell us that just as people's faces are different, so people's opinions are going to be different. This also applies to the Torah. There are going to be different understandings in the Torah. I could share with you the way I understand it. We know that God gave us the Torah. He gave us a way in which we're supposed to live in this world. We also know that there's no such thing as one who's more merciful than God. We have a halacha that says that when a person loses a relative, he's limited in how much he's allowed to weep over that relative. On the one hand, we say he must weep over that relative. He must mourn over that relative. On the other hand, the halacha also tells us how much we're supposed to weep over our relatives. And the halacha says, not beyond that. We're supposed to continue life. And if you weep beyond that, what you're saying is, you're so sorrowful over the loss of this person, you would have had more mercy than God did. No such thing as a person who's more merciful than God. God is the source of all mercy. And we're not going to be better than Him. So we have to understand that if the Torah is giving us guidelines as to how to live our lives, then the Torah is telling us this is the most merciful way, this is the most correct way in which to live your lives. Now, sometimes we come with our own conceptions. We've grown up a certain way, we have certain thoughts, we have certain values, we have certain ideals, and we come to the Torah, and not everything fits, or we don't see how everything fits. And we have to understand that if we're going to take the Torah and say, well, I think this, and if the Torah doesn't say this, then it's not for me, then what we're saying is, I know what's good in this world, and God doesn't know what's good in this world. And I know best. To an extent, we all do that. We all have a tendency to think, gee, this should be this way, and this should be that way. But we should be mature enough and understanding enough to know that we're limited in our perception of the world, and we have to take the cue from the Torah as to what's good and what's not good. We live in a world where you ask people what's good and what's bad, and people say, whatever you think is good. We live in a society that likes to call itself pluralistic. And part of pluralism, your opinion could be accepted, my opinion could be accepted. There's no one right way. Well, in Judaism we say that there is a spectrum of ways which are acceptable, but they're within a certain path, and that's the path of the Torah. The Torah gives us a certain amount of leeway, but there are things that the Torah says are abominable, and there are things that the Torah says are acceptable. There are things that the Torah says are very, very good, and the things that the Torah says are very, very bad. And no matter how much you think and how much you could search, if you want to know what is really good and what is really bad in this world, you have to look at the Torah. Part of the basics of our faith are that God revealed Himself to the Jewish people and said, I am going to give you the proper way of living in this world, and that is the Torah. And that is the best way. And that is the best way in this world, and that is the best way in the world to come. I'm going to repeat that. That's an important point. That is the best way in this world, and that is the best way in the world to come. People often think, if I keep the Torah, I'll get a great portion in the world to come. It's not only in the world to come that the Torah is the best way for us to live, but also in this world. If a person wants to get the most out of this world, going by the way the Torah is the best possible way. Now, sometimes a person might think, I'm not open on Shabbos. So how is this so good for me? My neighbor's making more money. How is this so good for me? I spend a part of the month where I don't touch my wife, where we separate the beds, where we keep certain halachas. How is that good for me? So maybe a person is short-sighted. Maybe we don't see everything. You'll speak to people who have more experience, and maybe they'll be able to explain to you how that's good for you. Maybe you haven't found the people who could explain it to you. But you have to approach it with the understanding that whatever is in the Torah is really the ultimate good. Ordinarily, people think there's truth and things that aren't true. But when it comes to good and bad, there's no connection between truth and good and truth and bad. There's nothing that's really good or really bad. Go back 100 years. People felt just like you have to educate your children, and sometimes you have to give them a smack. You have to educate your wife. Sometimes you have to give her a smack. What can you do? She misbehaved. She got something wrong. Go back 200 years. You go to the Puritans. If a woman spoke disrespectfully to her husband, that a special clamp she'd get placed on her tongue, and she'd have to walk around public domain with her tongue sticking out in a clamp. He could take her to court and say, she spoke disrespectfully to me. This was law. These were moral people. These were the founding fathers, the Constitution. the most wonderful people in the world. We have a lot to thank them for. But this is what they thought was good. Thomas Jefferson had a slave, had a servant. He felt he was a good person. He was trying to build the most moral society in the world. And he succeeded to an extent. The United States moved the whole world forward tremendously, morally. The United States is one of the things we have to be thankful for. There's a lot of good in the United States, and they moved the whole world forward. But he had a slave. A person who's trying to be as good as possible, he had a slave. So in his time, that's what they thought was good. Today, they think there are other things that are good. Some things they think that are good, we know are abominable. But the world says they're good. Go back some more years. Go back to Plato. What did Plato say was good? So the most moral person will take a little boy, and he'll mate with him, and that's the ultimate good. That's Plato. Okay. The world changed from then. In Russia, if a man would go with another man, he'd be put in an insane asylum. They call that crazy. Today's world, they're trying to re-justify that. They say that's okay. The Torah doesn't change. God said, I created the world, and I created the world in a fashion that there are things that are good and there are things that are bad. And that doesn't change. That hasn't changed in all the years. The world has been beating women, and the world has been disgracing women, and today the world is still disgracing women, only today they call it that they're honoring them. It's some great honor for a woman to be standing in a bikini on a showcase. That's how you honor a woman. In halacha, we don't deal with women that way. We have loads of halachas, which we're going to discuss some of them tomorrow, how to honor a woman and how much honor you owe a woman. That hasn't changed. In 100 years, in 500 years, in 1,000 years, in 3,000 years, since the giving of the Torah, that hasn't changed. The Torah, God told us, this is the proper way to live your life. And when we approach questions like this, we have to be prepared to approach them with the understanding that what the Torah is going to tell us is what's right. And if it doesn't jive with us right now, we have to understand that that means we're not yet on a level to understand it. It doesn't mean that it's wrong. Now, you're welcome to go to anyone you want. Go to an Orthodox rabbi. There are other people with other opinions. You're welcome to hear what they say. I'm just saying you have to remember that the Torah way is going to be the good way. I'm going to represent what I understand the Torah would expect us to do in the current situation. But I want to stress that we're going to have two stages to this discussion, and that's why I wanted to ask that you stay for both stages. We're going to talk on the ideal level. If this were a Torah state, and we had King David running the show, how would the show look? And then we're going to discuss what are the limitations in today's world to doing that, and what are our obligations in light of that, how much we have to compromise. But I think we have to build it that way. We have to understand that there's the ideal state, and then there's the present state. And they're going to be very different from one another. They aren't going to come close. You with me till here? Okay. Mm-hmm. Still awake?
I think even when King David himself lived, he was also not really a perfect king. They always had to make compromises.
They had to make compromises. What do you mean?
They made him lie.
Tell me what you mean.
At first they had to recognize him, and not the whole nation of Israel recognized him, so there were a lot of stages in this recognition, and even when he was king, I don't know for how long it went really smoothly and nice or something like that.
Those were other limitations. I'm talking about how he led politically, how he led the wars, mm-hmm. how he protected the country. That's our question now. What would a king do? A king that was godly appointed, what would he do in our state?
Yeah.
So I'm not 100%.
We had a few hundred people sometimes who were loyal, so we also had to deal with the rest of the Israelis.
So there were also limitations there, right?
Yeah.
But in an ideal state, what would be? So I'm not sure I'm right, but I'm going to tell you what I think would be. I think that in an ideal state, a government has to protect its people. And beyond that, the government of Israel has a special obligation to protect the people who are supposed to lead the world to being the most moral and good world that it could be. That's our job here. Batemtiuli, God tells the Jewish people, Mamlechet Kohanim, a kingdom of Kohanim, priests. What do priests do? They serve God and they teach other people how to serve God. Vegoy Kadosh, and a holy nation, separate from the other nation. Kadosh means separate. We have a job in this world. We're supposed to move the world forward. Now, in King David's time, if someone would have attacked the Jewish people, so King David would have fought back. And King David not only fought back, but King David also ensured that the person wouldn't consider fighting again. So sometimes it meant destroying the town and chasing them out of their country, not leaving them to be. So they were refugees. It's true, they had to find another country to live in. But they endangered us. So, like, I think is logical, your first thought has to be how to protect your country. There might be a second thought, how you help them. And we're going to discuss, there were aspects that all the nations were in awe of how morally King David acted to his captors and to the people he defeated. But the first step is, step number one is you have to protect your own life. That's every person's responsibility, and that's the government's responsibility. Step number two is there's an aspect where King David ensured that he wouldn't be attacked again by being as forceful as possible when he fought back. He said, I can't have a situation where my people don't know tomorrow if this one's going to attack them or that one's going to attack them. So when he fought his wars, sometimes he did things, tactics, that were exceptionally cruel so that the other nations would hear and they'd think 10 times before they started with the Jewish people. He took the people in one war and he said, okay, we're taking ropes. We're going to measure. Every third rope gets to live. I don't care who you are. Every nation has to hear that when they come to fight us, what's going to happen is we're not going to say, he has this connection, he has this connection, he's this person, he's that person. You attack the Jewish people, you're going to get fought back. And no one's going to start thinking, maybe he's this, maybe he's that. There aren't going to be any questions asked. You attack, you're going to get destroyed. And that's how he destroyed them. So did those people deserve to be killed? They were already captives. They weren't endangering him. But there are people who had chosen as a people to fight the Jewish people. So when you fight back, you say, okay, I have to fight back and protect my people. So I do the utmost I can to protect my people. And if in order to do that, I'm going to have to kill 3,000, 10,000 people, I'm going to do that. Because that's what I have to do to protect my people. And the most basic obligation I have to my people is to protect them. At the same time, no other nation buried the dead of the enemy. They let them be eaten by the animals. King David said, we don't do that. We take our soldiers as tired as they are, we bury the dead. When King David is chasing the Amalekites, the Amalekim, after his wife and children and everyone has been captured and his people are wiped out, they're just after a war and they come back to their camp, they see that everything's been destroyed. They don't know if anyone's left alive. The Amalekim came from behind, they attacked, they destroyed the camp and they took everyone captive. So everyone's finished. They sit there and cry and then they decide they'll run and they chase after them. They ask God and God says, go. So they go, and on the way, they meet a slave. They meet a slave who the Amalekim saw was ill, and they threw him, they discarded him, let him die, let him starve, let him fend for himself. He was about to starve to death. What's the first thing they do? They meet a non-Jew. The guy's starving to death, he's ill. What do you have to deal with him? King David's on the run to save his own family. They stop, they feed him, they give him to drink, they take care of him. And then they ask him, do you, by the way, know where the Amalekim are? And he says, I know, but I'm not telling you so fast. You have to promise me some things. Ask yourself, if this king was so cruel, how does one captor think that he could stand up to him and say, you promise me something? Why did he do that? He should have been scared. Oh, you're making conditions with me? We'll take you apart limb by limb. Let's see if you'll still have conditions. We'll chop off your first finger, your next finger. Let's see how long you stand with conditions. It's not what King David said. He said, fine, of course I'll live up to my conditions. What do you want? King David makes a deal with him. When the Jewish people are tricked in Yeshua's time, the Givonim come and they trick them. And they say, we want to cut a pact with you. We came from faraway land. We heard you're amazing people. You're the people of God. We want to join you. They trick them. And then they find out they were tricked. This was one of the nations that are really their enemies. Why did they trick them? They didn't really owe them anything. All the treaties that they signed with them are null and void. They don't owe them anything. That's not halacha. They don't owe them a single thing. Why? Because they tricked them. Yeah, I made a pact with someone. I thought he was Shimon. Turns out he's Reuven. So I didn't make a pact with Reuven. I don't owe Reuven anything. What do we say the halacha is? They don't touch the Givon. They don't touch them. We made a treaty with them. The rest of the world should hear. We made a pact with a non-Jew who we don't owe anything to. Who tricked us? We don't go back on our pact. A short time later, the Givonim are attacked. The Givonim send word to Yeshua. They say the other nations are attacking us because we made a pact with you. They're all upset at us. Come save us. Yeshua could have said, go to perdition. What do I have to do with you? I owe you anything? You tricked me. What do I owe you? No. Yeshua gathers the army and he runs out and he fights and he protects the Givonim. Protects the Givonim. What did he owe them? Why is he protecting a non-Jewish nation? Years later, the Givonim are water carriers for the Mishkan. And King Shaul kills out the Kohanim in the city of Nov, and then they lose their jobs. So they don't have money, and some of them die. And then a few years pass, and King David is king, and towards the end of his reign, there's a famine. And at the end of that famine, the famine year after year after year, King David says, God, 3 years, right? King David asks God, why is there a famine? So God says, the Givonim, you know, the Givonim. People from the Givonim died, these non-Jews. Some Givonim died and no one ever avenged their death. Go to them and have them forgive the Jewish people for what they did to them. What do we owe the Givonim? What do we owe them? 12 Givonim died because King Saul sinned and killed out a certain city. So they were the people who were sustained from that city and they died. What do we owe them? So King David comes to the Givonim and he says, what do you want? I'll give it to you. Just forgive the Jewish people for what they did to you. The Givonim says, we lost blood, we want blood. We want people hung from King Saul's family. So King David takes them one by one and he says, tell me, how much money do you want? What do you want? I'll give it to you. Tell me what you want. Please forgive the Jewish people. And each one, even on his own, says, we want nothing else. Just blood for blood. We lost relatives, we want them dead. And at that point, King David says the famous line that a Jew has three traits. Rachmanim, Baishanim, Gomlei Chasadim. A Jew is a person who's merciful, a person who is bashful, he's shamed when things should shame him, and he does kindness. They're not doing that. They're not Rachmanim. They don't have mercy. They say, we want blood for blood. We made a mistake. Why do they have to kill 12 innocent people? King David gives it to them. He doesn't have a choice. So they make a lot, and certain of Saul's offsprings are given over, and they hang them. The Givonim leave them hanging day and night. They don't keep the Torah that says, you're not allowed to leave a corpse hanging. And King David says, leave them hanging. I want the world to know that when we made a pact with these people, even for a non-Jew, if non-Jews died, we as the Jewish people have a certain responsibility to them. We took sons of kings, we took aristocracy, and we hung them for non-Jews. Now I'm asking you, what perspective do you have after all this? I told you two things that seem to contradict one another. I said, on the one hand, King David, when he went to war, would do everything, even if it meant to torture the enemy. He said, to protect the people, that's what I have to do, that's what I'm going to do till the end. On the other hand, we had Jewish people die because of our allegiance that was forged under fraud with a non-Jewish nation. What's the perspective? Now you guys could talk. Yeah.
Well, with the Givonim, it was Hashem telling us to do that. So I don't think you can take any precedent out of that because we don't have, that's prophecy, and we don't have prophecy.
Okay.
So wasn't it something you can... So in the rest of it, I think you could put in the most of it in the area of force, of strength.
Okay, so what you're saying is a very, very good point, that we had prophecy at that time to do that, but we did not have prophecy to leave them hanging for the months that they were left hanging. And when King David left them hanging, we have a tradition that he did that so that the world would know this is the way we treat. This is the way we treat this nation we did a treaty with. If it were only for the prophecy, I would agree with you. Maybe it was a prophecy for that time. And even then, we have to ask ourselves, well, what's the prophet teaching us? But it wasn't only the prophecy. It was after the prophecy that King David said, leave them hanging. I want the world to know what we did. Let every passerby see him hanging and ask, what's that body? Jews don't leave a body overnight hanging. That body's been here for days, months. And then they'll say, yeah. You're right, that's a body of a person from the king's family. That's a body from someone from the aristocracy. You know for whom they did that? For a nation who they made a treaty under fraud. And look what they did. They held themselves responsible to this extent.
Just to show people that we keep...
And the halacha says, the Gemara says, that many, many people became gerim after this. The world was in awe of what King David did.
Well, couldn't you also say that this was a form of tshuva for the Jewish people, and when you do tshuva, you have to
spill blood.
No, when you do tshuva, you have to. Part of tshuva is if it affects other people, you have to go to those people. So maybe we were, you know, apologizing to the world in a way.
Could be. Good points. I hear. This is just the beginning. I want to show that when we speak about protecting the Jewish people to the end, we also have to understand, as the Jewish people, we have a responsibility to the other end also. You all ask me, what do we owe the Palestinians? I'm not yet holding there what we owe the Palestinians. I just want to start developing the perspective that, even though you're going to hear from me that maybe we have to go full force against people that attack us, but you also have to remember that we're going to go a totally different route with regard to how much we have to help them. But I feel like everyone's falling asleep, so maybe we're going to have to stop here.
But
trying to understand all his views here.
We stopped them from working for the Beit HaMikdash.
It says that they couldn't work for the Beit the Mishkan because the Mishkan was destroyed in Nov, the city of Nov.
What did we owe them?
We had caused by the city of Nov being destroyed, they had people pass away. They didn't have sustenance because the whole city was destroyed.
But the Gwalim was
wrong. It was wrong. It was wrong to destroy the city.
It wasn't something David did.
The Givonim didn't attack us. You're right. Yeah. So we're going to have to discuss that. Right. Yeah. I'm not saying the Palestinians are Givonim. I'm not coming to say they're dead.
But the other time, when an enemy comes, the way Melech David acts is quite different.
We'll see.
Conventional.
Wait. Okay. We're going to have to go step by step. I'm just laying the groundwork. I just want to show that there are going to be two sides. You're right. We didn't have a pact with the Palestinians. I'm not saying the Palestinians are Givonim. I'm not saying any of that. I'm just trying to lay the foundations of at least some of the approach. We'll get there. We're working.
Did you bring any other examples except for... I'm trying to just keep everything in perspective here. Did you bring any other examples of compassion other than the Givonim?
I brought the case of the slave that they encountered on their way in a time of war when they were running and their families were all taken captive and they had nothing left, that they treated the slave humanely. That was another example that we brought, and we're just starting.
Did you have Amalek abandoned?
What?
It was a slave of Amalek.
It was an abandoned Amaleki slave, but they didn't know that when they came up to him. The man couldn't talk.
Right.
They came up to him and they could have just killed him. What? If I would tell you it was a Palestinian woman, you'd say, kill her. She's Palestinian. Like someone here said a minute ago, is there such thing as an innocent Palestinian? So is there an innocent Amaleki slave? They didn't do that. They fed him. And we have a mitzvah to destroy Amalek. They fed him. They took care of him until he was able to talk. And then he felt comfortable enough with them to give them conditions. To tell them, I'll tell you, but you have to promise me certain things.
Yeah, then you could just learn a precedent that are individuals that aren't terrible, but the arm that's against us.
Fine. So that's what Ephraim is saying, that we have to discern between a nation that's attacking us and not. I agree. I also want to make another point. It's very dangerous to take Tanakh and try to learn halacha from it. We don't know how to learn things from Tanakh. We have to learn from what Chazal told us in the Gemara. You take all Tanakh, you could get hundreds of wrong conclusions. I'm not coming to say a halacha from the Tanakh. I'm starting with just trying to build perspective. We're not yet holding by coming to a conclusion. We're nowhere near it. Just beginning with a few introductions, just to show the perspective in King David's time, a little bit of perspective before we get to the actual halacha. That's all. I haven't yet said any conclusion, nothing. I'm just bringing examples so far.
So I shouldn't feel bad that I'm
confused. No, you're supposed to be confused. I'm not coming to any conclusions yet. I'm just saying, take note. These are things that happened historically. The same king that did everything against his enemy, tortured enemies so that the world would hear, if you attack the Jews, you'll be tortured. You will be finished. There's nothing to talk about. You attack, you'll get attacked back. That same king, when he encountered the nation that we are supposed to hate most, he encountered an Amaleki slave. He took care of him first. He gave him to eat. He gave him to drink. The man was ill. The Amalekim didn't see any value in holding on to such an ill person. They say he's for sure going to die. What does King David do? Takes care of him. Why? So we didn't answer that. But we're just saying, let's start getting perspective. Things aren't black and white. There's an enemy, you kill him, you destroy him, you hate him. Things don't work that way. That's all I'm doing. I'm saying there are humane aspects, and even the other aspects are humane. Everything here is humane. But we have to understand that there are times of war and actions of war, and there are actions that are not of war and times that are not times of war. We have to discern between that. Like you're saying, there are nations that attack us, and there are times when we're not up against nations that attack us. Like the Givonim, they weren't the nation that attacked us. Correct. I agree with all of that. I'm just saying, let's start developing a certain perspective. You with me till here?
Yeah.
I think we're going to have to stop here. Yeah. Wait, you're jumping. I can't do that. No, 100% not. We cannot jump forward. Everyone wants to get to the bottom line. We have to build it. That's what I can't do. I can't start with the end. That's what you guys do every time we bring up this discussion. Everyone says, well, what about this and what about that? It's not right. You want a discussion. We have to work towards it. You're all taking into account one thing, and you're not taking into account the different thing. You're all taking into account that you all have strength, and you're not taking into account that I don't. That doesn't matter. Okay, we'll continue a little bit, if we could. I don't know what time.
Get him some coffee. Get him some.
No, we can continue another day.
Continue another time. It's really late.
Give me just a second. Being that we're going to have to end within a few minutes, so we're going to just try to understand what we got this far. We got that the Torah is going to quantify for us what's good and what's not. And being that God is eternal, and God created the world, and God knows what's good in this world and what's not, the Torah that God gave us is eternal, and the good in the Torah is eternal, and what's not good is eternal. The Torah is where we're supposed to understand the balance from of how to approach people who are kind to us and how to approach people who are not kind to us and people who try to harm us. We showed that in Tanakh we've seen precedents that on the one hand we did everything we could to protect the Jewish people, and that included even torturing an enemy. And we showed that there were times where we did exceptional acts of kindness to what would have seemed to have been an enemy, or at least not a friend, certainly not a Jew. A non-Jew who tricked us into gaining access to the land of Israel. And we showed that we tried to be as just and as correct as possible by prophetic guidance, as Baruch pointed out, but we were as just as possible to people who were not Jewish but were living in the land of Israel. Now, what we have to discuss, what we're going to have to get to, is how do you deal with, we'll call it a people, even though that itself has to be defined whether the Palestinians are a people or not. But let's assume that they are a people that some of them have attacked you. Do you treat them as a whole people? Do you treat them as individuals? How do you deal as the Jewish people, again, we're talking in the ideal state, to if there are a nation that attacked you, so what do you do with the people who say we want to have nothing to do with this war? After we deal with that, so we've dealt with the ideal state, what we would do ideally, which is where we want to get to. That's the first stage. After that, we're going to have to discuss what are our limitations in today's world and what will we do in today's world, in today's climate. I'll end with one thing. We have King Saul had to go fight the Amalekim. And the Navi records that when he went to fight the Amalekim, so he sent word to people who were living among the Amalekim, and he said, look, we don't have to fight you. Clear the way, get out of here. Why should you die with them? We're going to war now. We're going to destroy the people of Amalek. Why should you die with them? You were kind to the Jewish people in the past, so leave. And they did. And they weren't killed with Amalekim. That's just one thing, going with what Sasha was concerned with and what Michael was concerned with. We do have precedents for that as well. The question is, what would have happened if by sending those leaflets to those people, King Saul wouldn't have been able to fight Amalekim? The Amalekim would have known his plans and they would have fled too. What would be then? So that's something we'll have to discuss. And we see that they had to leave their homes, these people. It wasn't that he said, you know, just put a red sign on your door and I'll know not to touch you. He said, I'm coming to war. There's nothing I can do. When I come to war, I don't know who's going to die. You can't just start saying, you're innocent, you're not innocent. You're innocent, leave. There's a war's going to happen here. You don't stay in the war front. Now, beyond that, we're going to have to discuss everything in the ideal sense and the practical sense next time. Any questions still here, except for getting to the bottom line, which we're not doing? Are there any questions about what we said till here?
Or a thought?
What? Just a second. Yeah, 1 second. Yeah? Who were those people? They were the people of Hever HaKeni, the people from the Keni, which we have a tradition where Yisrael's offspring. Yeah. What do you want to say, Gregor?
Happened that King David counted the people, Jewish people, and then he had three shows. The very first sickness of the people, dying, or starving, or I don't know what the third.
Is it either an enemy attack?
So why he got this punishment? Because he didn't went according to the law, no? Because of this, the Jewish people got the punishment. Can we say that now that the Palestinian Authority got stronger and got this chance to get more power against the Jews, is a divine punishment? Because if you think that everything goes according to the ruling of God, like the highest authority, that this is a punishment to the Jewish people that we get this kind of money.
I don't think we could know what's a punishment and what's not, and I don't think we could know what's a punishment for what. Whenever things happen, we have to take heed and take a lesson from it. I'm not certain that the fact that Hamas went up is a bad thing for us. I'm really not sure it's bad.
They are collecting in a place and then we can get rid of them. Why?
There are many aspects where it could be good. I'm not so sure what's bad about it. I don't see a big difference between Hamas and Fatah.
It's good for Hashem because it shows really what the result of all this was, and it shows that the religious were against it, and basically truth was against it, and it shows that. But it might not be so good for our lives and for the state of Israel.
I'm not sure it's not good. That's what I'm saying. I'm not sure it's not good for our lives. The situation until now was the police found bullets that we gave the Palestinian police in Israel that we were shot. They used them to shoot at us.
Yeah.
They found some of the ammunition that we gave them in the bombs that were made to kill us. So what you had was a situation where on the front they were saying, we love you, we're making peace with you, we'll work with you, we just can't do better. And in truth, they were doing all kinds of things to kill us. They were. I mean, how many Palestinian policemen shot at us? It happened.
So at least they won't be deceiving like we learned.
So I'm saying, what changed just now? What changed? That they're wearing the same face as what they're doing. That you have a party that's saying, I will kill you. And until now, you had a party that said, I'll make peace, just give me more land, just give me this, just give me that. And at the same time, we have evidence that they were trying to kill us again and again and again. So what changed? I'm not sure anything changed for bad. Maybe everything changed for good because now the government's saying we won't make deals with them. And what kind of deals did we make before?
Bad deals.
We didn't make any deals that any intellectual person would have made. I can't see any logical reasoning for it. I could see a person being liberal. I could see a person wanting to help Palestinians. That I could understand. But what we did wasn't being liberal. We weren't even helping them. So I don't see it as being a bad thing. I don't see it as being a punishment. And even if it were a bad thing, we could never know why.
Yeah,
we don't know why.
But we still have the enemy. And now it seems that the enemy gets stronger.
Why? What's stronger about them? Now the United States isn't willing to work with them. Until now the United States was sending them money. Now the Israeli government isn't willing to work with them. And until now the Israeli government gave them money. The Europeans aren't happy with them. And until now they were. So I don't see it as being what happened badly here.
They are just more
I don't see what they gained. I don't. Maybe I'm missing something.
I
but
thought that like the first thing what I thought that King David, the first thing was that he got the enemy from one side. Like
that was an enemy attacking and our losing. He said, "You'll have you have a choice of having 3 years where you, the Jewish people, will be chased by the enemy." Meaning the Jewish people are on the run. Thank God we're not on the run. That wasn't a situation that an enemy exists. And anyways, this enemy existed before too. I'm not sure anything really changed. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe now they'll have the ability to change the education system there. Maybe now they'll have more people at their rallies. Maybe now they'll have the power to influence
but
a lot of other things there.
They have land,
no? I'm not sure. I'm not sure they're stronger. I really don't think...
I completely disagree with you.
Yeah, but one second. Let's.
But what are you going to do with the crock pot?
I have to take it, clean it, and bring it to him.
Tonight?
I'll bring it to him tomorrow.
Whatever. Yeah, we'll put water in it, leave it there overnight?
I'll take it home. I'll take care of it.
Tonight?
Yeah, but one second. What else? I'll take care of it. Thank you.
You're saying they just basically revealed their desires.
I don't see. On the surface right now, I don't see anything bad about it. I don't see it.
But the thing is, they know they could never win in a real war, and when you put the enemy as the official, like until now the enemy wasn't the official being, and so it was like a two-headed monster. Now you ask most political experts, they would say that they have no chance against Israel's army in a real war. Only chance they have against them. Against Israel but they were doing before. They were doing that, but if you put them as the actual army, now all of a sudden you have the prospect that there could at some point be a war because there's no gray area anymore.
Michael, what do you want?
I was just going to say the idea we talked about the idea that the Palestinians mm-hmm.
could be a war.
Is a question of whether or not they're a nation or not. That's the question.
And
I was just thinking, if they, and then we also have the rules on how to treat, how according to the Tanakh, how nations were treated and how individuals were treated, whether it was respectfully or King David would wipe out a neighborhood or a city if it was a nation that was attacking them. Now, if we say that the Palestinian people are an actual nation, then as such, we're sort of, on one hand, we're giving legitimacy to them, but on the other hand, it also gives us legitimacy to treating them as a whole people, as one, and maybe taking out cities. On the other hand, and they're also saying that they're a nation, so they're saying that. On the other hand, if we say that no, they're not a nation, that they're just individuals, as a lot of people nowadays want to say, then we can't say they're not a nation on the one hand, they're individuals, but we can treat them as a nation and wipe out whole cities. It seems like it's a tricky, sticky...
Right. We're basically finished, right. For tonight, we're finished. That's true, we just have to remember that sometimes there's going to be the concept of guilty by association. If you're there... What are we supposed to do? I mean, the United States doesn't do this. No other country does it because it's not going to work. You say, this is your warning. If you're going to be in the neighborhood where people are shooting at us, you're going to get killed. There's nothing we could do. We're very sorry. We don't want it to happen. You're welcome to leave and not be there. But I have to shoot back. And what we're doing now is stupid. We're losing lives. Very often they do. Almost always they do. That's what even the liberals say. Even I read an article about how they tried to fight them. They tried to fight the Hamas. They told them, don't shoot from my house, you're endangering me. The Hamas put a gun to his head and said, you don't like it, leave. But he offered him the option to leave. He had the option to leave. People have the option to leave. They don't have the option of telling him, don't shoot from my house. That's true. But they do have the option to leave. It's true. It's very sad, but we're not endangering them this way. The Hamas is endangering them this way. People do have the option to leave. They don't have the option to tell them, don't shoot from here. That's true. I'm not holding them accountable for that. There's nothing they can do about it. But they have the option to leave.
The Palestinians who are living abroad, We saw them when they are in demonstrations, they burn, and their slogans. So they have, they fear nobody. I mean, if they are in Palestine, maybe Hamas, or so there will be the case that there are some innocents. But we see that the people who are outside, free and protected, that they their slogan, this and that, they are a true enemy.
I hear what you're saying. I'll just point out one thing to you. You don't see all the Palestinians who are living abroad and don't say anything. When they don't say anything, you don't see them.
We saw them.
I'm saying you see the ones that speak. There could be 10 times as many people who don't speak. And them you won't see because they're not speaking. So that's... there are other levels which I disagree with what you're saying. But I'm saying even on the most basic, just the assumption that you're making, I don't think is fair. When I speak, you see me. When I don't speak, you don't see me. So there could be a million Palestinians abroad who are very happy with the state of Israel, but they don't say anything, so you don't hear them. When a person is upset with the state of Israel, he goes and burns
so
a flag, you'll hear about it.
If at least those who are innocent live abroad, they have also the chance at least to oppose their fronts.
You expect them to be so righteous? He has to go fight him? Why should he break his head over
so
it?
At least they are potentially...
I wouldn't go with that. I think there are other things we have to discuss, but that I wouldn't go.
Even the Moroccans don't do it. Most of the Moroccans.